Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go. And it's that time again. It's Wednesday. It's a True North podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me up there in Seattle, Washington. Bill North, the World Series champ. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in hot Los Angeles, producing, playing a little co-host with him. 347-205-9631. 30 goes quick, so catch the archive version if you miss it on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, Power Now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay that red carpet, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. Bill, it's the threes. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? You're bringing another great legend in on this show, my friend.
Hey, life is good. I'm wonderful. You can reach me at BillNorte15@gmail.com. BillNorte at 15@gmail.com. I hope I got that out, huh? We've got a guest today that played 19 years in the big leagues. I consider him a friend. I was throwing out the first pitch one time, and he got in front of the line and said he's going to catch it. And we've been friends ever since. Anyway, this is one of the kindest, nicest people you ever want to meet. And he did real well in his career. He played, well, I'll ask you about it, Mark. How are you?
I'm well, man. I'm well. It was great to catch up with you a little bit last week in Seattle. And, man, I appreciate you having me on the show.
Hey, man. I couldn't be better. I know that we had a pretty good time at the All-Star game.
We did. We did. It was great for the city of Seattle, but for me, it was just great running into guys like you and some other guys that I played against and came up watching as a kid and, ended up being teammates with a lot of them.
Yeah. You know, it was such an honor to be included by my friend Dusty Baker. And I consider it a lifetime achievement award, but it was a wonderful seeing you and the other guys and Dave Winfield and all that. What do you got to say about the All-Star game?
Oh, man, the All-Star game, it was great. I got a chance to go. It was my third All-Star game going to watch. I saw one in Kansas City, I want to say 2012 or 2013, and then last year I was in L.A. and caught that one. So a great experience. It's getting bigger and better every year. Ken Griffey had his HBCU Classic, the first one, next year to be here in Texas. So it was just great being able to see all that and be involved with it. Got a chance to catch up with a lot of my Mariners teammates. So it was a really, really good experience. The game was a lot of fun watching, the best in the game go out there and do it and get it done. They did a really good job.
I'll tell you this much. I watch batting practice, and these, especially the Latin players, they took batting practice and would hit 90% of the balls coming to them the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And that kid, Arias?
A Rosarina.
No, I'm talking about the kid that's leading the league and hitting 380.
Oh, Arise, yeah.
Yeah. Arise, yeah. I'm going to tell you something, boy. This kid is a hitter.
Oh, my God. I love watching
this. Amazing hitter. And I'm telling you, that 5-6 hole,
mm-hmm.
I mean, in batting practice, that's what he does. And then at the end of batting practice, he would turn on the pitch and hit the ball off the wall or out of the ballpark in right field.
Mm-hmm.
You talking about use the whole field.
Yeah, that's some kind of hitter there.
Yeah. Mark, are you here?
Well, yeah, I am here, and I didn't want to interrupt that great conversation you had, but, Mark, I got to ask you, when you look at baseball today compared to when you played it, how has it changed other than more or less the rules? I know the bases are as big as domino pizza boxes, but When you look at this, I mean, the stolen base is trying to come back. The bun has been extinct in some ways. Chicks dig the long ball, but has the game really changed as much as when you played it? Because in certain ways, I don't see the dynasties as much as I used to growing up.
It's changed a lot. And I know it's changed even more so from when Billy was playing. You know, for me, it's really been the philosophy of the game that's changed. The hitting philosophy's changed. The pitching philosophy has changed. The hitting wise, they want everybody on the roster that picks up a bat that's a non-pitcher, hit the ball out of the ballpark. It doesn't matter what the situation is. If they're down by 5 runs, leading off an inning, they're trying to hit a 6-run home run. So that's kind of one of the major things. That's why there's so many strikeouts. It's either home run or strikeout. Pitching-wise, the pitching philosophy's changed because they want all these pitchers to strike everybody out. But you look around and you have very few pitchers that can pitch through the 7th inning, 8th inning, and, man, definitely not, you know, pitching 9 innings and, you know, throwing a complete game. Very rare in today's game. So, you know, just what they're wanting from these players has just changed tremendously. To me, it's not really – it's not as exciting as it used to be.
It's not as talented, right. I think.
Right.
And let's go back to hitting. They actually teach these kids to come through the strike zone with an upward swing.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's trying to pick the ball out of the strike zone.
Yeah, it's tough to do. And it's tough to do swinging up to get to a ball that's trying to go down. If you don't hit it perfectly or if you don't get it in that perfect spot, you're going to miss it. And that's what happened.
That's called a strikeout.
Exactly. It used to be you'd have 2, maybe 3 guys in each league, in the league, that would strike out 200 times.
Yeah.
Now you have that many on every team, and that's acceptable. And that's crazy to me.
If you make contact with the ball, there's 2 out of the 3 things that can happen are good. You know, they can make an error or you can get a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And putting the ball in play makes them have to play you.
Right.
And what's gone is a bunt for base hit, stolen base. And I always maintain that if they put 6 guys on one side of the field, there are many times in the game that even the power hitters come up that you need base runners.
Right.
And they're still hitting into the shift and that. And I maintain that you shouldn't have to legislate the shift. The hitters should have brought them out of it.
Right. Exactly. If I came up to the plate and they had 6 guys on one side of the field, I'd still be playing.
Yeah. I tell them, take 50 bunts every day in spring training.
Believe it.
And you know what? But you got guys that hit 216 with 39 home runs. I figure that they might have only got about 50 more hits in the season.
And they end up, you've got 39 home runs and you got 75 RBIs.
Right.
And the
thing is, they reward them with a big contract.
Right. With the philosophy changed, they've changed the rules to fit the player.
Right.
And that's something that, it just didn't used to be that way. Here are the rules, and these players, figure out how to play this game within these rules. There have been more rule changes in the last 2 years than there was in my entire 19-year career playing.
Right. And the thing is that when I see ball players taking a piece of paper out of their back pocket to find out how to play somebody, you know, I hit, man. Everybody came to the plate. I knew how they hit.
Oh, you got to you know, they take a piece of paper out of their pocket, or they, you know, flip open their hat. It's in their hat, and they've got to figure out where I play this guy that I've played 15 games this season already.
All right. And what did you learn in that time?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I'm telling you, my job as a center fielder was from 320 feet out there or less to see where the ball hit on the bat and run to the spot where it goes.
There you go.
And now, because in our, even before you, in our era, it was you gave in at two strikes to put the ball in play.
Mm-hmm.
And now they take that strike out. When's the last time you saw a hit and run?
Oh, it doesn't happen. They don't know what that is.
It's amazing.
Today's hit and run is when the guy in the batter's box hits it and then they run.
Yeah.
That's their hit and run today.
I want to talk about the 2001 year when you guys won 116 games.
Oh, let's do it.
And you know what you did? You hit 286 that year, stole 39 bases. What did you say? Hey, man, now you inching up into my territory.
Inching up, but not quite there. I never got to that level.
And you had a 384 on-base percentage. That's a good year. And in that situation where you guys won 116 games and you got that much action, that had to be exciting to be able to be a contributor like that.
And that's exactly what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a cog in that chain, and we had an absolutely great team. That was so much fun just to come to the ballpark every day. And, man, I'll tell you, we probably started feeling it probably after the first month or so.
Uh-huh.
Definitely after, you know, by the end of May,
yeah.
We expected to win every day. Every single day. We weren't coming to the ballpark hoping, hey, if we get some good pitching and some hitting and some defense, we got a chance to win. No, we knew we were going to win every game. We literally
did something. And you damn near did.
Yeah.
But that thing is you don't win a pennant in April, but you sure can lose one. And you got off to a wonderful start. Your team got off to a wonderful start. And that when you're around that infectious energy, it permeates the whole, all of the 25 players, the managers, the coaches, and the city. And it was 116 games.
Oof.
That's a lot, man.
That's amazing.
You know,
I was going to ask you, Mark. I was going to ask you a quick question. You know, I think what people don't always ask is the questions to when you ask somebody how instrumental was somebody in your life, and I think for you it had to be at an early age when you were coached by Bob Mendoza, a coaching legend down there in San Diego. How instrumental was he to get your baseball career on its course? Because 19 years for more than a cup of coffee in the show is worth something. So. Mendoza had to be a part of that, I would imagine.
Yeah, he was. And there were a lot of people that poured into me as a kid. You know, I have a couple of older brothers, well, three older brothers, but two of them were home. My oldest brother was, you know, in the Army, so he was gone. He's about 19 years older than me. But he played baseball, so it trickled down from him. My brother Kenny, who's 4 years older, he got drafted by the Padres, actually, in 78, but decided to go to school. He played at University of Arizona. My brother,
that's a good program.
My brother, a couple years older than me, he actually played in the Angels farm system after I did, or actually at the same time that I was in a minor league. So baseball was always in my blood. Loved playing it as a kid. Bob Mendoza was my varsity coach, but we also had a coach, Lenny Arevalo, who was our JV coach. He was actually a bullpen catcher for the Padres.
Mm.
So they would get us into any of the Padres players that would put on a clinic or something like that. they would bring myself and another teammate of mine, Sam Horn, who was a number one draft pick by the Red Sox, same draft in 82 that I came out in. So, and actually, he's part of the reason I was drafted. They were coming out to see this guy, 6'6", 250 pounds, or 225 pounds at the time, hitting 500-foot home runs in high school. So they just happened to see a little skinny kid with a really good arm who could run and hit from both sides of the plate playing shortstop. So that's pretty much how I got found. But Bob Mendoza, Lenny Arevalo put it in the time and, you know, all that that energy with me. And then I also had, you know, my Little League coaches that put in a lot of time with me doing extra work that were, you know, in the neighborhood. So when it wasn't baseball season, they were still working with me and doing different things. So I had a lot of people pour into me as a kid.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Because I had the same thing. But you are also a football player.
Yeah, I play a little football. I'll say a little bit because I only played 1 year. I played my senior year.
Uh-huh. But you got offers, didn't you?
I got more football offers than I had baseball offers, yes. And now the only reason I played football was because my brothers told me, said, listen, you're probably going to get drafted, so we want to, you know, you should probably, you know, give them some things to think about to try and up your value a little bit.
Yeah.
So I had a fantastic year playing football, but that wasn't my passion. I could have gone and played, you know, college football. I don't know, you know, anything about it. You know, getting past college playing football, but that wasn't my passion. Baseball has always been my passion. It's what I wanted to do. So when I got the opportunity, I said, listen, I got this advice from my sister-in-law. She said, listen, if, you know, well, you've gotten drafted, you should probably go ahead and sign, because if you, you know, you take the chance and try to get to the big leagues now and you don't, they're going to pay for you to go to school anyway. So why go to school now and then miss this opportunity to play professional baseball, which is what you've always wanted to do?
What round were you drafted in?
I was a ninth round pick. That year, the Angels didn't have a 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 because they had been signing all these free agents, you know, Reggie Jackson, Rod Carew. So they had been forfeiting picks. So from 4 through 8, they didn't have a pick. So I was their ninth round pick.
Wow, that's something, man.
Yeah.
Well, and not only that, when you look at it, you played in an era where guys knew hard-nosed baseball. There was a winning mentality in the clubhouse. And one of those guys was Derek Jeter. You know, I'm sure you're talking to him. Here's a guy that hated to lose more than he liked to win, more or less. So you've had those scrappers. I mean, any conversations with some of those guys when you were playing, whether it was the Greg Maddoxes, the Tommy Glavins, the Derek Jeters, or anything, just to pick their brain on stuff?
So for me, and I don't know how it is for you, Billy, but the guys, my contemporaries that I played with,
mm-hmm.
I don't hold them in the regard that I hold Billy Northsend, because those are the guys that were before me. Those were the great players. So talking to a Jeter, by the time Jeter got to the big leagues, I already had 9 years in. So that wasn't a guy that I was going to go to and really ask anything about. We talked and, you know, played hard against each other. So that wasn't the guy that I was going to go to for advice about anything, because, like I said, I had 9 years in already. Guys that I was going to go to would be a Dave Winfield, who was a teammate of mine with the Angels, or I could call Rod Carew, you know, Dusty Baker I did, Cito Gaston. I've known him since I was a kid. He used to, you know, run around with my brother in San Diego. So, for me,
Nate Colbert.
Oh my God! You know, all those Padre guys. Rupert Jones was with the Angels.
Rupert Jones.
George Hendrick. I was very blessed and fortunate to come up with a group of veteran guys that literally took care of me.
And this was a dynamic when I came up. My mentor was Billy Williams, and my roommate was Ferguson Jenkins.
Oh, my God.
And what it's like you and I in our relationship, that we have the older guys have a code to make sure that to teach the younger guy that comes along about living and playing Major League Baseball.
Absolutely.
And they told me where to go. They told me where to eat. They picked me up to take me to the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing that with you is I have a responsibility to be there for you. And that thing right there, and it was mostly among the black players.
Right.
And, you know, I played in the South and that, and, you know, I'm from the Northwest. And those guys helped me so much and brought me along and taught me so many things about living in the big leagues and taking care of yourself and that. And what a great gift to have. But that still goes on, okay?
Man.
But there are fewer African-American players in the game, no doubt. But, I mean, through your time, you had the same thing. And when you mentioned Winfield and Cecil Gaston,
mm-hmm.
And were you there? Ozzie Smith, was he still there?
Ozzie was playing. He was one of them. Gary Templeton.
Gary Templeton. Easy.
Oh,
easy.
Wow.
You talking about there are balls that Ozzie Smith dove for. I was in spring training with San Diego Padres in 82. And I watched in spring training, I saw a ball coming up the middle that Ozzie Smith was a dove for, and Gary Templeton kind of standing up and threw the ball. The first base, he didn't get the guy. But his range, this was one of the greatest, they call him Jump Steady. boy, a blast, and really nice man. If you got the experience, Gary Templeton, you saw one of the greatest baseball players play the game.
I'll tell you what, I hit like that. That's who I emulated as a switch-hitting shortstop with long hair. I had the Jerry Curl back in the day. You better believe I did. I got the chance to meet Tempe when I was 19 years old. I was living in Garden Grove, and his mother-in-law lived in the same condo complex that I did. So he would come over all the time. And so she heard that I was, you know, a minor league player. And she said, well, when my son-in-law comes through, I'll, you know, I said, okay. I said, he plays? She said, it's Gary Templeton. And I couldn't talk. I was speechless. From that day on, the next day, I had my little garage open and I pulled my little folding chair out and I had it back deep in the garage because I didn't want to be right there sitting, you know, on the drive, you know, when he drives by. So he came by the next day and I saw his car go by and I was like, oh my God, there he is. And I'm like a 5-year-old. I'm 19 years old now. I'm acting like a 5-year-old. And so I watch him get out of the car and she meets him outside and, you know, she pointed down to, you know, to my condo and I'm like, oh, my God, my heart starts beating, and he starts walking that way. And I'm like, oh, no. And listen, he came over, introduced himself, you know, gave me a hug and said, hey, man, good to meet you. And at that time, the Angels had their spring training in Mesa, Arizona, but we didn't have a home stadium. So the first 2 weeks, we traveled around playing games. And then the second 2 weeks of games, we moved our camp to Palm Springs. And then everybody came.
Yeah. They always did that. They would leave Arizona and go to Palm Springs.
And that first game, that first series was always against the Padres. So Tiffany told me, he said, Mac, when you guys, you know, when we get to Yuma, because I told him I was going to big league camp that year. He said, so when we get there, he said, I'm going to get you. We're going to take you out to dinner. And you better believe that very first game they were in town. He said, Mac, I'll pick you up at the hotel and we'll go. And so my family had come over from San Diego. And I told, you know, after the game, you know, we typically go and eat. And I said, hey, I can't. I'm going to go have dinner with Gary Templeton. And my brother's faces were like, oh, Gary Templeton. I said, yeah, I'll catch you guys later on when I get back. So just doing things like that. And I had so many guys, and not just my teammates, Frank White, Willie Randolph. When we went to play those teams, They came over to me, introduced themselves, gave me their phone numbers. Mac, you need me, call me, whatever you need, I got you. And that's how it was throughout the league, especially, you know, my first 10 years in the big league. So it was great, and I tried to pass that along. I think I did a pretty good job. Actually, even now, some of the guys that I played with, their sons have made it to the big leagues, and when they come through Texas, I make sure I go get them, go take whole food or give them some home cooking from my wife. I make sure that
They're going to be at McDonald's. If you don't feed them, they're going to be at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. Wow. We're down to 4 minutes and change. I wanted to get your impressions on, God, I've been doing radio 19 years, and I'm going to have to get my idol when I get up to heaven and have a nice conversation with him. Willie Stargell, Dusty Baker spoke so highly of him. Billy Norton, you did. Mark McLemore, Willie Stargell.
I'll tell you what, one of my favorite players. Pittsburgh Pirates were one of my favorite teams. I love the yellow and black. Willie Stargell, Dave Parker, all those guys.
Bang, man.
Brought up in San Diego, a National League team. That's who came through.
Mm-hmm. Clemente was gone.
I don't think Clemente that much, but those were my guys.
Yeah. I saw Clemente in 72 when I came up in 71. But I saw him in 72, and he was the greatest ball player that I ever saw walk on the field.
Wow.
And I've been talking about 30, 40 years, and then I looked at King Griffey Jr.'s body of work, and I think he was the greatest ball player.
He would be, in my opinion, he would be the home run king if he hadn't played on turf his entire career.
Right.
That really, really hurt his body, especially once he got to Cincinnati. That was just hard. That old turf was hard on a body.
That old turf, you come out with your knees hurting and your back hurting. And, you know, I started on grass in Chicago, but it was the kind of thing that you played on one of the maybe two players in the American League West that played on four teams.
The only one that played on all four. Actually, I'm the only one who played for all five.
Wow.
Even
all
the
five?
There were four initially, huh? Yeah, they were in the National League at the time. But, you know, technically, since they're in the AL West now, I played for all five.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Hey, we're running out of time. Craziest thing you did throwing a baseball to somebody that you'll never forget.
Throwing a baseball to somebody or at somebody?
To a fan or somebody, and what they made you throw. Oh gosh, probably some of the greatest stories when people will beg for a ball.
I don't really have any crazy stories about throwing a ball to a fan. But I definitely have some stories about throwing balls at guys that were trying to come in and take me out.
Little Felix me on there.
You come from under and you make them get down.
I actually threw it at them because they were trying to be a little dirty. So there were a couple of guys that I actually hit in the head intentionally. I wasn't too nice when people were trying to intentionally hurt me. Taking me out is one thing, but trying to hurt me is something totally different.
Mm-hmm. If they roll, I was one of the hardest base runners, but I never rolled on anybody. Hal McCray and Madlock, they used to, but it's the kind of thing. That left foot, you better get it off the ground.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Great story.
What a show, man. 30 minutes goes by quick. We could talk about brawls and everything on this show. We got to bring him back again. We had Lee Lacy for 3 weeks. Why don't we roll Mark McLemore for a couple, Bill?
Yeah, I would love to because there's many other things.
Oh, my gosh.
I would ask him about.
Hey, please do. I'm open. I love it. I love it.
I will leave you with this, Mark, and I get this argument on XM with the guys and everything. I will tell you, being 62 in November, watching baseball six decades, to me the 70s had to be the best with all the teams. It kind of looked like the SEC with all those teams, the world champion A's, the Yankees, the Pirates, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Tigers, the Reds. I mean, just on and on. I don't know what your best decade is, but we'll have to talk about that get you back on this, because I know Bill's going to side probably with me on the 70s. Right, Bill?
Oh, yeah. From 54 to 80, the greatest ball players that ever played the game.
I'll tell you what, I'm siding right there with you, because the 70s was when I was growing up watching guys like Billy North and guys that looked like me go out there and do it, and that's what gave me the inspiration to get to the big leagues, because I wanted to be like them.
And boy, they could hit.
Oh, my God. I just love
it.
I got the opportunity to play against Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and those guys like you that you used to watch on TV, and then to be in the locker room with them was one of the greatest.
And I got goosebumps right. I got goosebumps right now just talking about it. I just love it.
Oh my God! I still can't believe how my Pirates didn't face your A's in one of those series in the 70s, Bill. But that's a story for another day. As we wrap this up, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, my friend.
Well, you can reach me on Gmail, Bill Norte, BILLNORTE 15 at gmail.com. And I appreciate you guys listening. And what a great interview. Mark, if you're available next week, we'd like to call you back.
Let's set it up. I'm ready to roll, man. Anytime.
Okay, we'll bring him back, man. We'll talk about Bunning. We'll talk about some of the players he played with, some of the road trips. Man, oh, man, I'll tell you, and I'll leave you with this, guys. No disrespect to doctors and lawyers across the country. The hardest thing in life is to be a baseball player, and these guys have done it. Till then, catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll be back for the second part of this great interview with Mark McLemore next Wednesday, same time, same channel. Have a blessed one, guys, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you so much, Mark.